This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions can come to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. We also have a way of getting questions for my live show, which is Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m. But if you should not avail yourself of the opportunity to call the show live, the same number, 877-726-8255, affords you an opportunity to record a question, and you can record a question, and we'll use that as grist for the mill for the live show. But this is a podcast. We're answering email questions, radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination. I'm with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. I'm disturbed by, and we've talked about this a little before, by a trend towards shadow banning, throttling down, and outright censorship of the kind of information that we share with listeners on this program.
Yes.
And it...
Very disturbing. It, Orwellian.
Yes.
As you described it.
And it has it has affected some of my colleagues. Green Med Info has been throttled down to virtually a drip, you know, just almost no social media dissemination.
Dr.
On Facebook, Twitter, and also via Google, on Google searches.
Yes.
If you, and Dr. McCullough has suffered immensely from that. He's a guy who really played the social media game very well and accumulated a big following. And now he's completely throttled down. And the statistics are very, very dramatic. It's down, you know, 90%. There's even some of the more conservative organizations, they're very reasonable and, you know, sometimes they write articles that are critical of a conventional medicine, you know, be careful about the drugs you use. There are some hazards associated with drugs. MedShadow was actually completely temporarily banned from Facebook and managed to get reinstated. I asked our web people who handle our social media, has there been, have you noticed this? Has there been trend? They said, oh yeah. They say that our organic, whatever the term is, SEO or the organic views of our podcast we post on, when we post them on social media or the articles we post, down 60%.
Wow.
Down 60%. Now, conversely, what's happening is that some of the establishment medical websites like Medscape.
Oh, yes.
Up 60%.
Medscape,
up,
Medline.
Up 60. Medline, Medscape, up 60%, up 70%. So it's almost like they're shifting traffic to, quote, authoritative sources.
Yeah.
Who
they're deciding what the consumer should consume.
Right.
And, in terms of information.
And the pretext for this was vaccine misinformation. And so there's... And in fact, in California, Governor Newsom just signed a law saying there will be no more vaccine exemptions. Doctors who write vaccine exemptions will be penalized. There will be no more vaccine exemptions because we don't want any of this nonsense. And you know, it's kind of paradoxical because what they, you know, the abortion argument is we want the woman to be able to choose. We want the woman in consultation with her doctor without the government in the exam room to make a decision about abortion.
Okay? Yeah, hands off my uterus.
Right. Like it or not, like that stance or not, that is the stance that's being taken. and certainly something that a governor, progressive governor like Governor Newsom would endorse, is like, let the government not intervene in abortion decisions. But when it comes to getting a vaccine, putting something into your body, that is a, you know, there's some, let's put it this way, there are some vaccine injuries. I'm not anti-vaccine, there are some potential hazards associated with vaccines. They don't want to, A, talk about it. They also don't want doctors to write exemptions for people because they think it's going to cause a major resurgence of some of these diseases. And there's something to be said for that, is that I am concerned that
We don't want measles outbreaks.
We don't want, you know, a return to, you know, the Middle Ages.
Right.
However you feel about vaccines, this is sort of bled over into information that is controversial or alternative. Mm-hmm. Or integrative in this field, the kind of stuff that I think we cover fairly responsibly here on this program.
Absolutely.
So what do we do? The strategy.
Well, stop using Google.
Right. The strategy is, look, we can't tell everybody to stop you. They're going to use Google, but the way we're going to get information out is via our newsletter.
Yes.
They can't stop the newsletter.
No. Nope.
They cannot, you know, it's, they can't, what they can do is they can, they can limit the dissemination of our newsletter via Facebook platforms,
right,
or make it harder to find it on Google, or make it, you know, more, I get nowhere on Twitter. I get no traction on Twitter. And it may be because, it may be because I'm not, crazy enough. you got to be really crazy to like make a splash on Twitter. You know, it's like.
But everybody can just go to drhoffman.com.
Yeah.
To access all that information.
Right. And they're, you know, they can't, you know, tear down your website. What they can do is they can limit the spread of information via social media.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're going to go a little bit into a guerrilla tactic mode.
Well, here's what needs to happen. People need to stop relying on social media for their up-to-date news information or health information or anything like that.
Because somebody, there are people editing that information.
Yeah.
They've appointed themselves the guardians of good information. Now, I got to tell you, there's a lot of really nutso weirdo information on, you know.
That's true too.
I mean, and so where do you draw the line? I mean, with scary rumors, Russian bots, you know, if like 9/11 denialists, you know, that kind of thing. You know,
I was here. It happened.
Yeah. Well, no, it was deliberately. It was like what do you call it?
Conspiracy theorists.
Somebody who blew up our own buildings, you know, to go after the oil fields in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of information, at the very, you know, whether it should be banned or whether it at least should be contextualized and challenged.
Yes.
You know, information can be challenged. It's a forum. You know, people can push back, people can correct. And I've done that.
Scrutinize.
I've argued a little bit. I've said,
sure.
I've looked at some articles and said, well, this isn't true. Look it up, you know, from some more extreme statements that people have made.
Yeah.
You know, about health.
Yeah.
And, you know, then sometimes people take it down or sometimes people say, thank you for clarifying. But it just realize that we are, it's not pure democracy anymore.
That's right. That's right. My husband and I have been using DuckDuckGo instead
that's
of Google's
a way to go.
Search engine.
Yeah, but
for more than a year now, and
you can do that on an individual basis. Yeah. But we know that the predominant media are, you know, Google, Facebook, and Twitter. You know, for social media,
right?
Space, and you know, to some extent, Instagram, which is also part of that.
Yeah. And there are higher rates of depression now being blamed on social media. So not just about, you know, the idea that reading somebody's Facebook post and seeing where they went on vacation or how wonderful their lives on, this is what they posted, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you reflect on your own life and
best case scenario.
Oh, wow, I wish I was this, or I wish I was doing that, or I, what's wrong with my life or something.
Yeah, but contrary-wise, you see like these poignant things like, I was just diagnosed with cancer, please help, pray for me, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, that's different.
It's like a cry for help. It's like, it's a weird weird place to go.
Yeah.
You know, my dog died.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those.
Mm-hmm. Dog died.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And pictures of a dog.
Yeah.
That's a type of, that's a...
And cat videos.
Cat videos?
Still abound.
How cute is my cat?
And laughing babies. That's always fun.
How cute is my cat? Oh, my cat's dead.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
It's...
I just want to say that we need to start choosing where we get our information. We have to be scrutinizing. We have to employ a whole lot of critical thinking and second guess a whole lot of things, especially when it comes to social media. I don't get my information from social media. I am not on social media. Call me whatever you want, Dr. Hoffman, but not going there. Not going there.
I think you're an independent-minded person, as evinced by the stance you take in the field of nutrition, is that you're not a wackadoodle person, but you also are an independent thinker on some of the issues that, you know, in your training, I think you've broken away from some of the dogmas that were inculcated in you during your training in nutrition.
Yes.
As was I in medicine. Mm-hmm. So, okay. It's a tough time for independent thinkers.
It is.
Okay. Let's move on to questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com. is the destination for questions. Let's go.
We have one from Mary. Working with a cardiologist in a hospital, we asked him, is there one food to avoid above all others? He answered, yes, cheese. Is the doctor correct? Right.
Wrong.
Is the doctor correct?
Okay. That's a pretty, I would say that's a pretty typical cardiologist answer.
Yes.
Because cheese embodies everything that's bad.
Yeah.
It's high fat.
High fat.
And it's no fiber.
Yeah.
And it's got lots of saturated fat.
Oh, yeah.
And cholesterol, which is situated back in about, you know, 1988.
Yeah.
What has been discovered about cheese consumption, now, many studies have now shown that the more cheese a population consumes, the less likely they are to get cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
And that it is not associated with cardiovascular disease.
Right.
Strangely.
Right.
Because, you know, we think of, we're so inculcated with the idea of this gunk, you know, coating our arteries and clogging them.
Well, wasn't one of the, or two of the original countries in the Ansel Keys cholesterol hypothesis, where he only narrowed it down to 7 of the 22 because they didn't fit his narrative? The Swiss diet, the Finland diet,
right.
A lot of cheese eaters there.
Right.
Very little heart disease. So
that can't be right.
That didn't fit his narrative about the whole cholesterol theory, so he had to leave those out.
Yeah. So
now,
so you actually wrote it, now totally by coincidence, you wrote an article along the same lines, didn't you? What was the title of your article?
Oh, it was to promote a healthier nation. What is the one change you would make?
Right.
And I said give up sugar, refined carbohydrates, processed foods. Eat whole, unprocessed food the way it's found in nature.
But that's several changes.
That's several. No. We're eliminating junk food.
We said one food.
We said one change.
One change.
We're eliminating the processed food.
Okay.
Now, whole.
So yeah. You might boil it down to avoid cotton candy.
You could.
Right.
But I meant more than that.
Yeah.
But as far as full fat dairy or full fat cheese, if you do consume dairy, if you are not allergic, if you don't have a problem with dairy, and you're consuming cheese, full fat is the way to go. It contains a very important fat, transfacenic acid, which is a natural occurring.
Trans fat.
Yeah, trans fat.
Yeah.
It's a naturally occurring trans fat. This is a good trans fat.
Does it have anything to do with CLA, which is also?
Yes.
Yeah.
It promotes conjugated linoleic acid. So transfacenic acid is actually the precursor.
Okay.
To CLA.
Right.
And you get this only from full-fat dairy, not non-fat dairy.
You know, I was watching, I think it was either 60 Minutes or it was the morning show on one of the news shows on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about dairy farmers.
Mm.
And it was also about, it was the morning show. It was CBS morning show this last week. And it was about dairy. And it was also about faux milks.
Oh.
You know, like oat milk, very popular. Soy milk, of course, for a long time, very popular.
Hemp milk, almond
coconut milk, you know, all these milks that are not really milks. And so this poor dairy farmer, he says, you know, I spoke to my son and I said, I think I'm going to have to go out of business. He was an organic dairy farmer. You know, it was like grass-fed dairy. Mm-hmm. Says, I can't keep up with it anymore. I'm going to have to sell the beautiful dairy farm that's been in this pristine environment, you know, where the cows are outside and everything. It's just not profitable enough. Can't afford it because the price of dairy is so low because of poor demand, because of all these competing milks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was a proponent of full-fat, organic, grass-fed dairy.
Yes.
And it's just not happening anymore. Our dairy consumption in this country is way down.
Right, right, which is interesting. And then so, there's the promotion of A2 milk as opposed to A1 milk, certain proteins that as humans we are more tolerant of.
Right.
The A2 milk having to do with, I think, Holstein cattle or something.
It's more
primarily.
It's more ancestral.
Yes, you know,
The protein, the A1 protein is thought to be more atherogenic than the A2.
Than the A2.
Right.
There's that component as well, I believe. And
I think what we have is a typical cardiologist response that I think is wrong. In fact, one of the components of dairy that's very helpful is vitamin K2, especially cheese. Cheese is high in vitamin K2 as a fermented
cheese and
food.
Meat, right.
And K2 is helpful for the bones. It's also cardiovascular preventive, which accounts for what is sometimes referred to as the Dutch paradox, where the Dutch consume an enormous amount of dairy, fermented milk products. Mm-hmm. But the fermentation gives them a fairly high amount of vitamin K2. That's why Dr. Sugars it has demonstrated that vitamin K2 is protective against cardiovascular disease. He's from Holland.
So the one food to avoid is not cheese, although just like every cardiologist loves to see a total cholesterol level of 127. I keep seeing that number over and over with anybody taking about anywhere from 25 to 40 grams of Lipitor. I keep seeing the number 127. And I say, gee, your cardiologist must love that. Yeah, look at how low that is. But then we have to be afraid of other things down the road.
Yeah.
Like less CoQ10, dementia, not enough cholesterol.
Steroidogenesis of the the steroid-based androgens.
Mary, I would go back to that cardiologist and tell him sugar is the one thing to avoid above all others. Sugar and its first cousin, white flour. Just get rid of those.
Can you do that in a hospital?
Well, you know, good question.
There may
question.
Be repercussions if you talk back to the cardiologist.
I know. You know what? Back in, I think it was 2004, I was doing my dietetic internship. My clinical rotation was at Jacoby Medical Center in the Bronx.
Hey, I trained there too.
You did?
Yeah, I went to Einstein. So Jacoby's a really cool place.
Yeah.
You see some interesting stuff there.
A lot of gunshot wounds. I mean, a lot of everything.
Yeah.
Talk about a varied clinical.
A lot of trauma, but also a lot of weird third world diseases because people, there are a lot of immigrants there. Mm-hmm. So you see like leishmaniasis,
right.
You know.
And they're a level one, I believe, trauma center and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the cafeteria at Jacoby Medical Center, while I was there, was a McDonald's.
Oh.
I guess they want repeat customers.
Yeah.
In the hospital.
That was probably an improvement over what I had when I was there.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty deadly.
Wow. I remember going there, having no choice of nothing to eat.
Right.
Somehow I wound up in that McDonald's and I bought, they had a fruit snack. They had these sliced apples in a plastic package.
Right.
Along with candied walnuts or pecans.
Okay.
It was disgusting.
Yeah.
These pecans were so sweet. They were sweeter than candy.
Yeah.
And whatever they coated the apples in should not have been consumed by any mammal, as far as I'm concerned.
Gave it shelf life.
Oh my gosh. So I had to throw it out and I just am hungry. That was the better option.
Who orders that at McDonald's? That thing had been sitting there for the last two weeks.
Healthy choice.
No. That was just window dressing. It was like.
Right. But now you
It was like virtue signaling by McDonald's.
You could have nuts and fruit. These are healthy options.
Supersize me with burger and fries.
Right. That was the cafeteria at Jacoby Medical Center. And of course, we were all floored. What's going on here? They must want repeat customers at the hospital. So, Mary, cheese is not the ultimate bad food. It's really sugar and
balance, I will tell you that one of the best hospital cafeterias, even when I was, even 40 years ago.
I'll match you on that.
Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Really?
Yeah, really good. Really good. And it's good now too.
Okay.
And so they're a little bit aligned with the hypothesis that diet can make a difference.
Do you remember Cabrini Medical Center?
Yeah, I never rotated through there.
Yeah. I did. I had my first field
That's
experience
in
there. No, Cabrini Medical Center was.
Oh, it's in Manhattan.
East 23rd Street,
yeah,
or
yeah,
so.
Yeah. I never
East
rotated
28th
through
Street,
there. Yeah,
30s,
it was in
somewhere.
I think it went under.
Yeah, it did. It did go under many years ago, but that was my first field experience
right.
as an undergrad there
right.
doing nutrition. They had the best cafeteria. Dr. Hoffman, we saw thank you notes from the patients.
That's why it went under.
Posted on their bulletin board.
That's why it went under.
The food was delicious. I ate the food.
Right.
I ate hospital food.
Right.
It was good food.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, yeah. And but they went under.
They went broke.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. But that was probably the best hospital cafeteria ever that I've experienced. And
that's wild.
I've only experienced maybe a handful of hospital dietitian roles.
Okay, how did we get there? Oh, the cardiologist with the cheese.
The cardiologist with the cheese.
Okay.
So cheese is not the foe.
No.
Okay. We have an email from Ivy. Dear Dr. Hoffman, over a year ago, I asked my doctor to test me for celiac disease because a few years back, I tested positive. I do not have any abdominal symptoms and find it difficult to believe that I could have celiac disease. Well, test results came back and my tissue transglutaminase, IgG and IgA, was high. The other tests, gliadin deamidated, IgG, IgA, were normal. My doctor dismissed these results as unimportant.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other conditions besides celiac disease that may cause the test to become positive? Whoa.
Okay, so it's interesting. When it comes to testing for celiac disease,
the gold standard is the biopsy.
The gold standard is the biopsy.
The intestinal.
But that's pretty inconvenient.
Yeah.
The other thing is when you do an intestinal biopsy, you have to be eating gluten. So
right.
sometimes I've had patients who say, well, I want to find out if I really am, you know, sensitive to gluten. I've been on this gluten-free diet for a really long time. I want to know if I need to bother. So a couple of patients have gone to Columbia University where they have a celiac disease treatment center.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dr.
they've
Peter
said, fine,
Green.
You know, we'll just, here, eat a bunch of gluten for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And then we'll biopsy you. And they say, no, thank you.
No, gluten bothers me.
Well, yeah. So that's kind of
that's
inconvenient. When you have an elevated tissue transglutaminase,
mm-hmm.
It is prompted by the release of zonulin in
yes.
the intestine, which is mm-hmm. a sign that the gap junctions that knit together the cells
mm-hmm.
and cause the cells to absorb only the good things and keep out the bad things. That these channels are being disrupted.
Yeah.
And that is termed leaky gut syndrome
yeah.
or altered gut permeability.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably, this test is not specific for celiac disease. That's
yeah.
why they use the gold standard as the biopsy.
No, but
it's indicative
come close.
Of something going on.
Yeah.
And this person doesn't talk very much about their diet.
Right.
Are they on
right.
a low gluten diet or gluten free diet?
Say.
So the other thing is that tissue transglutaminase often normalizes when you're on a gluten free diet.
Yeah.
So you may have the potential. So other ways to test for susceptibility to celiac disease, you can do genetic testing.
Mm.
HLA-DR2 and DQ2 and DQ8,
yeah.
Which is pretty certain to mm-hmm. indicate not that you have it, but a predisposition to it.
Yes.
If you don't have it at all, then it's very unlikely you have celiac disease.
Right.
Now, you could have intolerance to
You could have gluten. Intolerance to gluten.
You have intolerance to
You could have the same symptoms as somebody with celiac disease. But here's the other thing. The symptoms for celiac disease decades ago used to be primarily abdominal symptoms,
exactly.
weight loss. But that is no longer the case. It could be ataxia. It could be
neurological.
Brain fog.
Yeah.
It could be neurological problems.
Yeah.
It could be obesity. It doesn't have to do.
It could be chronic iron deficiency.
Yes.
Infertility is
yeah.
common. Hypothyroidism is often linked
right.
to it.
Right. So Ivy, just because you don't have abdominal symptoms doesn't mean you don't have celiac disease. Do you have an autoimmune disease like Hashimoto's or lupus or anything else? Do you have psoriasis?
Mm-hmm.
That's often linked to gluten.
Yeah.
Do you have dermatitis herpetiformis, am I saying it
correctly? Yeah.
That one, that's like the skin version.
Which is hard to diagnose sometimes when it's subtle.
Yeah. So there are these things that may be going on, and it would have nothing to do with having any abdominal symptoms at all.
Right.
So you could be feeling dizzy and weak. You could have neurological symptoms. You can have tingling numbness in your extremities.
So I think that doctor's comment is kind of cavalier, because what he's saying is, like, you know, this is common in medicine, is that unless you have a full-blown syndrome, they tell you you're fine.
Right.
And then when you have the full-blown syndrome, then, oh, it's something consequential.
Right. You either have diabetes or you don't. No, there's a whole big gray area.
Spectrum, yeah.
There's a whole big spectrum. I'm very bothered that the doctor dismissed these results as unimportant. So that's very troubling to me.
Right. And it all kind of comes from the perspective of, oh, it's so cumbersome to avoid gluten. It's so hard to...
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why put this? And some doctors even say, they say, this person's going to suffer from malnutrition on this diet. So why impose this diet?
No. It's so cumbersome to give up smoking. It's so cumbersome to give up my drug habit. It's so cumbersome to give up my daily happy hours. It's so cumbersome.
Exercise.
Come on. We're just talking about gluten.
It makes you sweat. It's like you have to take a shower.
I don't want to sweat.
I have to do my hair.
I have to do my hair. Change my socks.
Yeah. It's like, right. All these things. But from our perspective, obviously we're oriented towards nutritional interventions, personalized nutrition, and we think that a gluten-free diet is very attainable and very healthy, and it can be implemented very successfully. And it's not like you're going to go into, like, carbohydrate insufficiency if you don't eat bread, bagels, pretzels.
No, you will not. The carbs you're eating are the ones you're supposed to eat, your produce, your vegetables, and your fruits. So you're fine there. But Ivy, if you were, for instance, if you came to me in particular and said, these are my results and my doctor said this, I would first of all want to know how much gluten are you eating at all, if any, to see if these numbers are high because you're eating gluten, or even if you haven't been eating gluten and these numbers are high, is also concerning. And I would say further exploration, maybe you want to go to Columbia University, but you need to be eating some gluten if you haven't already. Get that biopsy. Even amongst my colleagues on the listservs that I belong to, we all agree that before you actually drop the mic on the whole gluten thing and say no gluten, go get that biopsy. So we make sure. So we're not just saying, yeah, you have gluten intolerance, so avoid gluten. Because what if they do have celiac disease that we don't know about, and they're being wishy-washy with the avoidance of gluten? That has consequences down the road.
Good.
So I would want to know if there is frank celiac disease.
Sure. But even
for that reason.
Even in the biopsy negative situations, people can bypass the GI tract and affect you in other ways adversely. Okay, we're gonna cut it short because we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, I'm gonna tell you about a promising new test for gluten intolerance, which will not necessitate that you eat a lot of gluten.
That would be great.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back.